Wake up call. Let's go. Get up. Out of bed. Let's go. Wake up. Come on. Let's go.
Welcome to the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola. My name is Wilbert Rito, and this has been my home for the past 30 years. I'm serving a life sentence here for a murder I committed during a bank robbery in 1961. I'm also a journalist. For the past 15 years, I've edited the prison magazine, The Angolite. While Alcatraz, Attica, Sing Sing, and San Quentin are all part of the American vocabulary, you may well never have heard of Angola. But hidden at the end of a long road in the most remote part of Louisiana, this prison has a history unlike any other. In the 1950s, it was officially labeled the worst prison in the country. In the 1970s, daily inmate murders branded it the bloodiest. Angola doesn't look like your typical maximum security prison. It's a sprawling prison plantation stretching for miles in all directions with fields, creeks, lakes, and woods. The prison is surrounded on three sides by the Mississippi River, on the fourth by rattlesnake-infested hills. Most of us live within the huge main prison complex, enclosed by 14-foot-high fences, reinforced with endless loops of razor wire, guard towers, and an army of security personnel. Behind these fences, there's a massive, unprecedented experiment taking place. The state is locking up large numbers of men and throwing away the keys so that they age and eventually die behind bars.
Straighten the line back up!
Traditionally, most prisoners serving life sentences have had the opportunity to go free after about 10 years. But in the early 1970s, Louisiana politicians came upon what was then a novel idea. They decided to make life sentences in Louisiana mean precisely that. They did away with the possibility of parole. Today, there are more than 2,500 men serving this so-called natural life sentence here at Angola. A number have now been here for some 30 years. Of those who've survived, most are in their 50s or 60s or 70s. The first generation of lifers to reach their twilight behind bars.
Come over here, I want to introduce you to the beautiful rose bush on the whole yard. This is one here, is my favorite. I named it after my wife, Ernestine. It's a beautiful pink rose. And somewhere or another, I keep it trimmed and uniform up until I call it my beauty. I know it sounds funny, but these are my company keepers. I enjoy these bushes. See, if it wasn't for these bushes, I wouldn't have nothing to do. So these bushes have come to be close, very close to them.
My name is Maurice Bickham. My number is 75251, and I'm 72 years old. I've been in prison since 1958. My crime is murder of two white deputies in a small town called Mandeville. They was dragons of the Ku Klux Klan. And I was a black man living in a white neighborhood. And they came to my house to kill me. They shot me with my hands up. And I fell and loaded my gun and I shot him. So here I am. 31 years later and I'm still locked up. I remember when my first gray hair came in my head. I was up here, I was in jail in 1960. It came right up in front where I could see it good. By 1961, I had one in my mustache. By 63, I had gray hairs all over my head. I've had three heart attacks since I've been here. The big one was in 1977 when the parting board turned me down. I lost all my teeth since I've been here. My eyesight went bad. I have high blood pressure, poor blood circulation. Yeah, I watched myself pass away, die little by little every day here in prison.
My name is Henry L. Patterson. My prison number is 54915. I've been in Angola for 30 years. I'm serving a life sentence for a murder I committed in a barroom fight. You know you're going to age. But then one day, a young guy walk up to you. Hey, Pop. And you get offended at first, you know. What you mean, Pop? You know my name, Pop. Don't call me no Pop, man. But then you go lay back a little bit, you sit down, you analyze, and you say, well, I am Pop now. I'm old, I'm gray, and I'm no longer Patterson. I'm Pop Patterson.
I'm Monroe Green. I'm 57 years old. My number is 62694. I've been at Angola for 24 years and 6 months. Serving a life sentence for rape. In the morning, all the younger men will crowd the mirrors. None of us older men will even use a mirror to shave in. It took me a while to figure it out, but we don't like to see ourselves growing older each day.
Since I've been locked up, I lost all my family mostly. I can see losing my mother and father, but all my sisters and brothers, all my aunts and uncles. God bless me now. The judge is dead, the DA is dead, the lawyer's dead, everybody's passed on but me. And when I look at it, I say, Lord, why I'm still here? Makes you wonder.
Time is now. Time is now. Serve the Lord.
To serve the Lord.
Time is red now.
Time is now.
To serve the Lord.
To serve the Lord.
Done got so late.
It's late in the evening.
And the sun is going down.
Sun is going down.
Most long-termers adapt to prison life by immersing themselves completely in some sort of activity. It's our way of escaping the reality of our situation. Some lose themselves in religion or sports or music. Others in violence and drugs. I lost myself in writing. I educated myself on death row where I lived from the age of 19 until I was 31. Although religious literature was all we were allowed to read in a death row cell, some guards managed to smuggle books to me. I read everything I could get my hands on and began to write. In 1972, when the Supreme Court overturned the death penalty, I left death row and 3 years later became editor of the prison magazine, The Angolite. Our cramped office is down the hall from the main prison control center near cell block C and D. Here, six of us work at old office furniture to turn out the bi-monthly magazine. At the desk next to mine sits associate editor Ron Wickberg, who's serving a life sentence for murder committed during an armed robbery. It was Ron's in-depth study of long-termers which brought national attention to the very real possibility that Angola will soon become the nation's largest old folks' home.
The old-timers here at Angola are in a state of semi-retirement. Instead of working in the fields like they had for many, many years, they've turned in their hoes, their shovels for canes, wheelchairs, crutches. They wear glasses. They wear false teeth. The prison management gives them menial assignments, cleaning doorknobs, washing windows, sweeping floors. They shuffle from place to place. They're no longer productive. And non-productive prisoners are kind of pushed to the side. This is a place of hard labor. This is a place where prisoners are required to work. prisoners who can't work are kind of put to the side, just allowed to exist.
There are now hundreds of elderly prisoners existing here at Angola. Most are housed with the general prison population, some confined to their beds, many subject to theft and harassment from younger inmates. Those just too old or sick live on the overcrowded wards of the prison hospital, stretching Angola's health care budget far past its limits. These long-termers have now spent more time in prison than the country's most infamous criminals and gangsters. Many have, in their own right, committed very, very serious offenses. But no matter the crime, no matter whether or not they've changed over the decades here at Angola, there's no way out for them.
The long-termers were put in prison 20 and 30 years ago. They have been forgotten about in prison. And that is where the problem begins. There is no mechanism to recognize when a person becomes rehabilitated. And at that point, some effort should be made to move them out of the system. It is the lack of this mechanism which has allowed the lifers population to increase 300% in just 10 years here in Louisiana. And this problem is not just in Louisiana, it's nationwide.
If y'all wouldn't mind rising, please, and remove the headgear. Please repeat after me.
We members
of the Lifers Association,
of the
Louisiana State Penitentiary,
in Angola, Louisiana,
joined together for the improvement
of ourselves
in society.
And
we have love in our hearts,
for all men.
Hope in our spirit, that our wrongs
will be overshadowed
by our rights.
The Lifers Association meets on the last Tuesday of every month here in the visiting room. Support groups like this one are filled to capacity with many inmates on their waiting list. Newly incarcerated lifers need only look to the old faces and pained eyes of the long-termers to understand the nightmare which lies in store for them.
No matter how dark the night,
we believe
the coming of the day. Thank you, gentlemen.
My name is Don Buffett, and people call me Frog. My number, 57391. I've been in Angola for the past 28 years, serving a life sentence for the rape of a white woman. The best way I can describe Angola for a long time is that it's something out of science fiction.
My name is Joe White. My number is 56310. I've been incarcerated for murder here in Angola since 1961. I've been here so long, it's difficult to imagine how it feels to be free. I don't think people can conceive what it means to spend all your life in prison.
I find technology amazing. You know, I find with the I don't know for sure, but they say they got super highways now. Okay, where you bypass the cities and all, so you don't have to go slow down and just straight through. And I never rode on no super highway. You know that. I wouldn't even know how to get on one. I wouldn't even know what to do if I get on one. They see you got lanes that you get in. You say fast, slow. You know what I'm talking about? And all these things. See, you say, boy, this is amazing.
If he was to be buried alive, that's what it would be like. Except for the television, we wouldn't know that there's a world out there. Except for the radios, we wouldn't know. We actually come here. And when we come here, everything stops. This is a graveyard. A graveyard of time.
I feel like my life has been frozen in time. You know what I mean? Like the Crosby Show. I look at those kind of shows and I wonder sometimes, is it fiction? Is it really real? You know, because I can only relate to that which I came here out of in 61. When I came in 1961, the restaurants were segregated. When I caught a bus, I caught the back end of the bus. I had to go to the back. I couldn't sit in the front. You look at the changes, you know, in that time, the period you stop, and they say, well, they're doing this today. They're doing that. You wonder, is it real? You know, that's for real, man?
The living dead is an accurate description of it. Because the things that it takes to live, to feel life, you're not in contact with that. We fantasize. That's all we have left, is our fantasies and our dreams. And this is what a lot of people rely on to make it.
I often picture my son in my mind's eye. The last time I saw him, he was 10 years old. And now he's 35. I often imagine the scene of when James and I face each other the first time. What will I do? Will we move toward each other? Will I be able to hug him? What response will I get from that hug? Will it be a loving hug? This picture runs over and over in my mind. It's like a dream that occurs over and over and over.
It's as if you don't exist. It's like you in the spirit and everything around you is alive, and you can't touch, you can't reach, you can't do anything but just look. We can't touch people's lives. We can't touch their lives. That's what tears us up. We can't touch their lives.
Recently, some disturbing things have begun to happen here, even by Angola's standards. It started a year ago with a long-term inmate named Francis Clifton. After serving 27 years of a life sentence for murder at Angola, Clifton had a most comfortable prison job. He was living outside the razor wire fences of the main prison complex, in a house here at the pens where he tended Angola's bloodhounds and attack dogs. At 52, he could have served the rest of his sentence free of chains and guards. But last April, Clifton ran. For 5 days, he hid in the hills, evading the bloodhounds which he, better than anyone, knew would eventually catch up with him. On the fifth day, exhausted, Clifton walked out of the hills, flagged down a car, and turned himself in.
When you finally realize you're going to die here, you just starts working on your mind. That's a terrible feeling, just know you're going to stay here until you die.
Clifton has spent the year since his capture in solitary confinement.
In spite of all the other fears and problems out there and worries on my mind, and the guards running all over the place with guns chasing me and knowing I could be shot at any time, I still was able to enjoy that little bit of freedom after 28 years.
A few weeks later, it happened again. Long-term inmate Donald Fink was being marched into the fields for a day's work. Suddenly, he turned and began to walk away. "I'm going home," he said. And as he started to run, the guards lifted their guns, aimed, and fired. Things got worse from there. Angola erupted in an unprecedented epidemic of attempted escapes, suicides, and killings. Many involved old-timers, traditionally the most stable inmates at the prison. By mid-summer 1989, a federal judge was forced to declare a state of emergency here. That order is still in effect today, and the desperate acts continue. Hopelessness is creeping through the tiers and cell blocks of Angola.
To me, I think life without the possibility of pardon or parole, if you know you have no hope for pardon or parole, would be worse than the death sentence, if you know you're going to die at Angola.
Hilton Butler was warden here until a state of emergency was declared last August. Butler had worked at Angola for 40 years But when things started getting out of hand, he was fired.
I'm no softy. I gave the signal for the switch to be pulled on the electric chair 11 times while I was warden. But I feel what's going on at Angola now is wrong. You've got to give an inmate hope. When he gives up hope, he's lost everything.
In today's political climate, the last hope for lifers, a pardon from the governor, has all but disappeared. A year ago, Louisiana's Governor Buddy Roma let Christmas pass without granting a single clemency. It was the first time that this had happened in the state's history. Here, prisoners finally began to comprehend the grim reality of natural life sentences. For many, particularly the older men, the fragile illusion of eventual freedom crumbled.
Since I was convicted of the rape 28 years ago, I've had a recommendation from the pardon board 6 times to go. Even the victim have asked for my relief, but yet the governor still refused to let me go. So it seemed like, you know, that we gonna die here.
Point Lookout, see, we sometimes call it Boot Hill. It's a place here in Angola where they buried the dead. Old timers thinks about it a right good deal, but they don't talk about it much because they're afraid that they might get buried out there. See, you buried out there, you really forgotten. Because nobody comes here to see you. Nobody even passes by Boot Hill.
When you die at Angola, you don't die as Henry Patterson lies. See, you die as 549 number 5 is in the ground up there. I don't want to die no more. I don't want to die insignificant no more. Nobody. What is that, a prison number?
I don't want to die here and be forgotten. I don't want to spend my last moment on earth here in penitentiary. I would like to see the outside once more. We're trying to hold on to a little faith, but it's constantly deteriorating.
When you start to realize that you're never going to leave this place, hopelessness begins to take hold of your time. It's like a disease. Everybody around you have it. And it's just a matter of time before you'll be next. That's the torture. Not giving us hope. People always ask me to recite this particular poem. And the reason I believe they do it because it touches something inside of them. It's called Just Thinking. Just thinking, prisoner's song. I want to drift along, sing a song, get high off memories. I want to get to know just once more how it feels to be free. I want to rip and run, have a lot of fun, come, go as I please. I want to sleep real late, give myself a break, put my mind at ease. I want to go. I want to go strange places, meet no faces, make myself at home. I want to reach behind, reclaim what's mine. Forget I was ever gone. I want to stretch out my arms, air out my lungs, get out my system, this inhibition. I don't know what I want to do. Tell you the truth, I was just thinking, just thinking. I sure
I sure wish this thing would come to an end.
Lord, swing a boat so low. Sweet time. Yeah, yeah.
Tossing Away the Keys was produced by David Isay with help from inmates Ron Wickberg and Wilbert Rito. The engineer was Anna Maria DeFreitas. The music was performed by the Angola Gospel Superiors. Lord,